Welcome back, everybody. My name is Kieran Light. This is Still Talking. I'm the guy who does not shut up about sports. We've got a great episode for you guys today because I'm joined by a fellow NFL content creator, a guy who runs a podcast. It's called the JV Podcast, in case you've heard of it. Johnny Vianos, how are you doing here, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, all right. I had your mic off for a second, my bad. Thank you very much for coming on. So tell us a little bit about your show. I just want to plug you here for a minute.
Yeah, 100%. It's the JV Show on Instagram, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your regular podcast. I do NFL content on Instagram, mostly short form, but we do podcasts throughout the year. I interview some CFL athletes, NFL athletes, and overall, just a huge fan of football. Play football here at the U of M for the Bisons. So,
Who's the coolest athlete? You mentioned NFL or CFL. Who's the coolest athlete you've had on?
Locally, Milt Stegall was pretty sick.
Turtle.
100%.
Yeah.
He was just a good overall guy, I'd say. He's just such a nice guy and a media personality because he's on, TSN
When I see him on TSN doing those broadcasts, I can just tell he's a genuine, just good, solid guy. And he's great. I love Milt. Yeah.
1,000%. And then his buddy, Davis Sanchez as well. I mean, I had both of them, and both of them were just 10 out of 10 guests. Yeah. I never had a conversation like that. So it was really good to have them on and connect like that.
Right. Well, let's just jump right into it. All right. So for those of you who listen to my show, you know that every 4 weeks, so quarterly marks is when I do my kind of like mini power rankings. I'd love to do a top 10, but I don't really have the time. This is what I call Light's List. And I just want to get right into it. I think I'm going to start from number five, though, this time. Number five for me is Baltimore. Baltimore's on a really good hot streak right now. I mean, they're winning games. The thing that really impresses me about them, and I know this is just kind of obvious, but, like, Lamar just wins no matter what. I mean, I'm not really going to talk much about playoffs, but, like he just wins. In his career, he's got a 71% win percentage. And it seems like this season they're able to overcome anything. They have what is just a terrible, terrible secondary. Their run defense is fine. And they have just a bad secondary, or maybe it's receivers who are inconsistent at best. You know, I've seen guys drop balls that, you know, they should catch. And as long as they have Lamar, and now I guess Derrick Henry could be thrown in that mix, it doesn't really seem to matter. It doesn't matter what hole they're in. As a Bengals fan, I've seen the opposite this season, where it doesn't matter what they do, they'll lose. So to me, I'd say the Ravens are kind of the anti-Bengals. You know, the Bengals are like the bizarro version of them, because they just win no matter the hole. And, I think it's fair to say they're the fifth-best team in the league. That offense is just so good. They just went up into L.A. and absolutely scored on them. They beat them. Like, that was a really, really staunch Chargers defense. Would you have Baltimore higher?
No, I think we're going to be very similar with our rankings here. I also had Baltimore at five. Mm. A lot of people think an 8-4 team shouldn't be in the top five, but when you do look at it, they've had a few bad losses, one divisionally against the Browns, and then obviously versus the Steelers. I'd say the only two teams I'm concerned about for the Ravens are the Chiefs and the Steelers. Seems like Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin have John Harbaugh's number when it comes to Lamar Jackson. But overall, the offense has to be a top five offense in the league. The only team I'd say that stops Baltimore from succeeding is themselves. I mean, they shoot themselves in the foot. They're the most penalized team in the league, which is ridiculous to have, especially with a more veteran roster, offensively at least. But
veteran coach too.
Exactly. So I think that's completely out of character for Baltimore. But when you do look at the roster as a whole, when they run the ball, when they rely on Derrick Henry to run the rock, I don't know how you wouldn't have them in your top five year.
Absolutely. And then number four for me, it's the Bills. They're 9-2 right now. And you mentioned some people are going to scoff at the idea of an 8-4 team in the top five. But here's the thing about power rankings. It's not standings, you know? Like, a team can go 5-0 against the five worst teams in the league and then can lose two games to two really good teams. Right. And I wouldn't put that team in my top five because you got to prove it. Right. And the Bills right now, proving it is kind of like the big narrative over the past couple of years. So here they are now with this great season that they're having. They had that 3-0 start and everything, but they're 9-2 now, and they just beat Kansas City. Now, I do have Kansas City above them in my rankings, and I'll explain. But first, I want to give the Bills their deserved praise. I mean, Yeah, they beat Kansas City. That was a big, big win for them. They're first in third down efficiency over the last 3 weeks. I'm big on third down efficiency. It just tells me what kind of a team you are offensively. And by the way, over those last 3 weeks, that is 53.8%. They're really, like, just efficient on that third down. And they lead the NFL in 30-point games this year. They have eight. No one else has more. Most of these stats were before yesterday's games. So, like, you know how when you look up stats and only a few games have been played, it's a bit weird. So I apologize if there's a little discrepancy or whatnot. And you know what's weird? They have the fewest allowed sacks in the NFL, which isn't something you could normally say about Buffalo over recent years. James Cook is a really great running back. Amari Cooper is honestly kind of still settling in. I feel like he'll just get better and better with time. This defense is, I don't know, how do I put this? A bit wonky, but opportunistic. And look, like I said, they beat Kansas City. That's always the big thing, is they beat Kansas City. But there's the obvious record. They're 4-2 against Kansas City in the regular season over the last 4 years. 0-3 come January. I'll believe it when I see it. And when I see it, I'll give them their due praise. But for now, I only have them at 4.
Well, it depends how you base your power rankings. I mean, I think it differs from individual to individual. If you're basing it off current, obviously the Bills took KC a few weeks ago, and Kansas City's also been, granted, missing few of their stars offensively, so their offense has been held back. But if you base it off that, I think you have Buffalo above them. But when you do look at it historically, the Bills haven't been able to capitalize against KC. I mean, nobody really has except Joe Burrow come playoff time against the Chiefs. So I don't mind having the Bills that low. I have the Eagles at 4 right now. They started, I think, 2-2 this year, but they've had a really good section of football after the bye week. The defense has been outstanding, top three defense in the league after the bye. And offensively, I mean, the reliance on Saquon Barkley, that was something I critiqued of Kellen Moore and Nick Sirianni. I'm still not a huge fan of what the Eagles have going on coaching-wise. I'm not a huge Nick Sirianni fan or advocate. But I do think, and I've said this, that the front office drafts and develops players so well that it compensates for the head coaching miscues and mishappens. Every single week, no matter what Nick Sirianni does, and he does have an incredible winning record in the league, but you look at the team and I wonder what head coach wouldn't right now.
Absolutely. I feel like even Zach Taylor could do wonders with this team. And, like, you know, perfectly brought up the Eagles, because they're number three on my team. You had them at 4, I had them at 3. Look, the Eagles, they started 2-2, but they're on a 7-game win streak. This is just, by the way, a lot of hot teams in the NFL right now. I honestly, looking back, I don't think I've seen this many teams on really good win streaks like this. Eagles, 7-game win streak. That run game, you mentioned, like, I wasn't really sure about Kellen Moore's reliance on Saquon. And I feel like that part to me, I had a similar feeling. That part to me has been disproven. I'm totally fine with it. Saquon, probably the MVP. Like, he's having such an incredible season. He's jumping over guys backwards. He's getting multiple 70-yard touchdowns in a game. Like, it's insane. And, like, their run game is so good. Saquon is so good. It's even better than Detroit's yard-wise. They've scored 26 points in six straight games. 26-plus, sorry, in six straight games. I mentioned the third down efficiency over the last 3 weeks. They're second to the Bills with 52.3. And my big thing for the Eagles after the collapse that was last season, and especially going into this year, because there's been a lot of talk about the Eagles ever since that Super Bowl run, is they needed to get my trust back. Because remember, the Eagles were like a hot team around this time of year last year. And we all know there was just that absolute collapse. They couldn't beat Tampa in the playoffs. And it was just absolutely embarrassing for them. I mean, everybody on that team got exposed, especially on that defense. The big question was, how are these guys going to address these problems? How is Nick Sirianni going to address these problems? I feel like that's why a lot of people have this overarching feeling that, like, okay, we know the Eagles are good, but we still don't like Sirianni, is because it seems like everything else about the Eagles but Sirianni has kind of changed a bit from last season. Like, he's kind of doing the same things. He's acting the same way. He's talking trash to not just Kansas City fans, his own fans now. I have a friend who's an Eagles fan. He told me the other day, like, we were watching that Rams game. He said, like, we win in spite of him. But look, I would say in terms of getting my trust back, they're about 90% there. Like, they need to beat Baltimore, and if they do that, then I'm all in on the Eagles.
I thought their prove it game was the Commanders, and Washington's kind of fallen off as a contender since the Hail Mary that they won off against Chicago. But again, I think that the last two games they've played, LA, where they dominated, Washington, where they dominated, I think they've been a pretty sound team on both sides of the ball. And Jalen Hurts has definitely improved, but I more so think that it's Kellen Moore utilizing Jalen Hurts in the right way. He's not throwing the ball nearly as much as he was prior to the bye week. So I think that plays into it. At my three, I had Kansas City. I do think they are a legitimate 10-1 team. People will find ways to hate on them or bash them because
three Super Bowls is three Super Bowls.
I don't know how you avoid history. Yeah. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, one of the most lethal quarterback and head coach duos the league has ever seen.
Absolutely.
They've done it without their first running back.
Yep.
They've done it without their first receiver. And when they come back, when they're healthy, Pacheco just got lifted off IR. The team's very, very dangerous, and they find ways to win. I know they came close against the Panthers. I know they've had close games in the past, Denver. But there's something to be said about finding ways to win, and that's what good teams do. That's what Detroit does. That's what Kansas City does. That's what the Bills have done this year. And I truly think we can't underestimate Mahomes and the Chiefs, especially after what they did last year and how they proved us all wrong in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I mean, like, so my Chiefs, I have them at number two then. Like, yeah, they're absolutely a legitimate 10-1 team, even as an NFL fan. Like, I can separate my analytical views from my fan opinions. And as a fan, I'm like, oh, God, I just wanted to lose. Like, I feel like we're all kind of that way. You're a Bills fan. You understand. Like, yeah, I'd like to see them lose. It's kind of – it's super annoying when you – like, there's all the jokes made about what they get going their way at the end of the games. And, like, you can say all that. But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. This is just one of the most lethal quarterback coaching duos we've ever seen. One of the best quarterback receiver duos between him and Kelce we've ever seen. And they've overcome – all these injuries. Yeah, Pacheco, Worthy, and I think, or no, sorry, not Worthy, Rice. I think Worthy's missed some games.
And the defense has been incredible.
The defense has been
Spags
fantastic.
What, a top defensive coordinator in the league?
He's top three. I'd say him, Flores, and I don't know. Him and Flores. Let's just go with him. I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they're fantastic. Whoever they have in Denver, because I know Denver's defense is pretty solid. This is just such, this is what. The difference between well-run organizations and just crappy ones. We've seen what's all the chaos going on in New York with both teams, really. And then you see just, like, despite all these adversities in Kansas City, it's just steady. All right, and I think people get tired of steady pretty quickly, and that's why they say the Chiefs aren't really that good, when really they are still a contending team. They are the team to beat in the NFL. Number one for me, look, Chiefs are the team to beat in the NFL. That's come playoffs. But the number one team to me in the NFL right now is the most overwhelming, dominant team on really every facet of the ball and on coaching. It's the Detroit Lions. I mean, they're 11-1. The thing that really fascinated me about their defense was everyone knows how good their offense is. It's all built around that just absolutely just that great wall of an O-line. And Goff is a very, very serviceable quarterback, and I mean that in the best way. They have the two great backs, tight ends, receivers, everything. A lot has always been like talked about as a defense because that was kind of, while it's never been seen as a bad group, it's never been seen as a group that will lose you games, it's never been on that same echelon. But what I was fascinated by was the fact that pre and post Aiden Hutchinson's injury, they've improved. Before he got hurt, they were allowing 18 points per game exactly. If you include that Dallas game where he did get hurt, where he only played like two-thirds or whatever, then it's 16.2. And yards per game allowed was 349 a game, 329 again, including Dallas. Since he got hurt, it was 16 points a game. And if you throw in the Chicago game from yesterday, then it's 15. And in yards per game allowed, it's 313. So, like, massive increases in the two most important categories for a defense. And then you talk about Kirby Joseph and the season he's having. I think, I don't know, him and McKinney, I think, are tied for interceptions right now. Brian Branch. How good has Brian Branch been this season? I mean, fantastic. DJ Reader is one of the best D-tackles in the league, I feel like. So they have just a fantastic defense, and it's they play honestly the same way as their offense does. It's just overwhelming. We're not going to give you an inch. And then, like I was talking about with their offense and that O-line, like you mentioned yesterday on your Thursday night recap, they have just one of the most athletic O-lines, and they can do so much with all these guys on their personnel. I mean, we all saw Penei gets the ball in the backfield, and we were hoping he would throw it. But even on a two-yard loss, it still took, as you put it, like eight Chicago Bears to take him down. And then he goes out of bounds. They lose 2 yards. Fans are cheering. Like, that's how good Detroit has run, which is crazy to say about the Lions, considering all their history. But they're just so good right now that even on something small like that, it's still, like, worth cheering for. They're a fantastic, fantastic team. Right now, they're the best team in the NFC. They're the best team in the NFL.
Look, their offense and their defense complement each other very nicely, and as good as their defense has been, it helps that the offense bleeds 25 minutes of clock.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
In the first half against the Bears.
Yeah.
So your defense really has to only go out there and ball out for 5 minutes and shut down a cold rookie quarterback who's been discouraged by Jared Goff, who's a seasoned vet, who's made a Super Bowl, who's made an NFC Championship too, matter of fact. And he's come out there, he set the tone for the game, and now your defense has to go out there and force Chicago to go 3-0. I mean, I don't think it's a tall task for a defense that's really, really good this year. And they've been incredible. So, yeah, I also have them at my one. I had Buffalo at two. Detroit, I see them as like a teacher, and their opponent is always like the student. They always are in control of the games offensively, and they don't allow their opponent to do much outside of their own realm. The Lions control everything.
They make everyone play their game.
And even in games that they're falling behind, like in Houston, Jared Goff, 5 interceptions. They find ways to win. I'm bringing it back. I'm reiterating my point. Finding a way to win, that's something Detroit hasn't always done historically. But this year it feels like there's a different mojo going on for the Lions, and you got to love it.
Yeah. I mean, in kind of a different vein, like there's a lot of philosophical, I guess, debate between like power rankings and Super Bowl contenders. Would you put Kansas City over Detroit as your number one contender just because of how good they are in the playoffs?
I mean, I think that's a legitimate argument you can make. I don't see a world where you bet against the Chiefs now.
No, absolutely not.
Until you're proven wrong. I'm a big advocate for betting for teams that have succeeded, betting for Tom Brady in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Everyone had written him off in the 28-3 versus the Falcons, and look what happened, right?
Bet on the Yankees, bet on LeBron, bet on Jordan.
Exactly. You bet on franchises that win, and that's what the Kansas City Chiefs have. It's a trait that a lot of good teams lack, a lot of teams with talent lack, and the Chiefs just have that. Chiefs, Lions in the Super Bowl, a lot of me, 99% of my heart wants to go with Detroit, but 1% of me knows that there's a very, very strong possibility that the Chiefs clutch up and they win another Super Bowl this year.
I think that's just the fascinating thing about the Chiefs when they go in that February game to just go into the Super Bowl. Like, obviously, you get the 2 weeks off going into the game, right? And it's like, as soon as the AFC Championship is over, the Chiefs in that 2 weeks just become a different team. Like, screw whatever roster construction you think they have. Oh, you think Juju Smith-Schuster isn't really an X receiver? Doesn't matter. Against Philly, he's going to go off. Like, that's the thing, like, that so makes him so tough to beat in the Super Bowl is the fact that in those 2 weeks, we all know how good Andy Reid is when he has time. Like, I don't know what his record is off a bye. Like, what, one loss in his career or something? Like, in those 2 weeks to prepare, these guys are so determined, so smart, creative, and ingenious that what you see in the AFC Championship is not solely what you'll see in the Super Bowl. That's something that I honestly, you can't say about really any other team. Like the Lions, if the Lions had won the NFC Championship last year, they would have played the same way in the Super Bowl. And that's not a bad thing. Like, that's what got you to the Super Bowl. Play that way. You're a great team. That's what makes you great. But that's why also the Niners lost, was because the Niners were playing their game. And the Chiefs were like, okay, we don't have to, like, they're kind of like a chameleon, almost. You know, once they get into the Super Bowl, they just change everything, and it's completely unexpected, and you have no idea what to do. You brought up the Bears, and when you're talking about the Lions there and what they had to do in that game, can we talk about the Bears? I mean, there's so much to talk about. I call it the 30-second sum up because those last 30, 36 seconds, whatever, perfectly summed up everything about the Bears organization. They squander a great opportunity. In this case, it was to beat the Lions. They're down by three. And then on the 15-yard line, I think it was, Jenkins, hands to the face, negates a key pass to Keenan Allen. Then on second and 20 from the 35, you attempt a QB draw. I don't know what Eberflus was thinking. And then on that QB draw, both of their tackles, as a former tackle myself, I wanted to vomit when I saw two tackles like fail hilariously in two different ways, and both their guys go untouched. Caleb goes right down, obviously. And then after that, no timeout. As soon as that ball got thrown, Eberflus should have been fired, which, by the way, he finally was before we got in the booth here. What do you think?
Yeah, it was fate. Like I said last night on my show, I didn't really discuss Eberflus because it was fate, and that was just the reality of the situation. We knew Eberflus was done. We knew he was fired. This was his last straw, his last saving hope. If he won the game, I mean, you could make an argument he sticks around till the end of the season.
Well, you beat Detroit, yeah.
Thanksgiving, best team in the league, but another coaching blunder at the end of the game. Let me read you an interesting statistic here, Kieran, because I know you love stats.
I love it.
The last playoff win for Chicago, 2010 against the Seahawks. I was 4 years old.
Dude, what? Are you kidding?
I was four years old.
I was seven.
Notable teams with more playoff appearances than Chicago since 2000. Chicago has 9 playoff games.
Wow.
The Jets, 12. The Chargers, 13. The Titans, 14. Panthers, 15. Giants, 18. These are franchises we deem to be terrible.
Terrible.
Most of them we deem to be, I mean, the Giants, we've scrutinized them all year long.
Absolutely.
And then you look at the Bears, I mean, when was their last successful season?
Oh, it was 39 years ago in 85 when they were doing the Super Bowl shuffle. I've known a couple Bears fans in my life. My cousin, although he's realistic, I'm not including you in that, Devin. But I've known a couple of Bears fans in my life, and yeah, they cling on to that 85 season. Honestly, if you're a basketball fan, one of the things people joke about all the time is like the Celtics' big three. They won one championship in 2008, and they act like it was a dynasty. It's the exact same thing, if not worse, with Chicago. I mean, they've been around for so long. They're considered to be one of the historic franchises, one of the, like, the Pittsburghs or the New York teams or whatever. Like, they're considered to be one of those kinds of teams, and I guess they are. But it's kind of pathetic when you look at how long they've been around. I mean, in 2019 or whatever it was, they were flexing how they were like, oh, this is our 100th season as a franchise. What, 100 years and you've done what? Nothing? Like, yeah. And, like, the reason why those 30 seconds in yesterday's game was so emblematic was just because you're letting down your promising quarterback. Like, I see a lot of people that were just hating on him, saying he should have snapped the ball. I don't think that was at all on Caleb whatsoever. I think he gets overhated for so many different reasons. People hate him for the painted nails, which is just beyond me. And then also just not reacting quick enough. Like, and that applies to not firing Eberflus quick enough, not calling the timeout quick enough, and not trying till the second half, which is something we've seen in both the Lions game and in that game against Minnesota. So, like, they don't try until they absolutely have to. And then they just come up short. That's what the Bears are. That's what they'll always be, I guess.
No, they're a losing franchise.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
I've actually been to Soldier Field. It's incredible. The fan base is incredible. They're a storied franchise. But when you really chop things up to what matters in the NFL, it's success, it's winning, it's Super Bowls, and the Bears, they just haven't done that. I know they have a great history. My dad's a huge fan of Mike Ditka. I love what the old Bears used to be, but it just hasn't been the same since 85.
No.
And to say that for such a relevant franchise that we recognize to be, you know, one of the most historic and storied franchises in the league, it's hard to watch them. When you see their previous starting quarterbacks, Caleb Williams currently, but Justin Fields, Trubisky, Cutler, it hasn't been good for a very, very long
Grossman,
time.
Rex Grossman, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, they've had their standards for a quarterback in Chicago are probably the lowest in the league statistically, but, like, they've had capable, serviceable quarterbacks. They've had promising quarterbacks. I mean, even Trubisky looked good for a while. We know he sucked eventually, but, like, how much of that was just because he was in Chicago? And yeah, Justin Fields, he's proved it in Pittsburgh this year. When he has a stable organization, when he has good structure and a team that knows how to develop players well, he's still got a lot. I never thought Justin Fields was a bust. I never thought that he was, you know, just someone to give up on. As a Bengals fan, when he went to Pittsburgh, I was like, oh crap, man, they're gonna get him. They're gonna get everything they can out of him. And then they had Russ, and that just made me even worse because I'm like, hey, he's a Hall of Famer. But like, we've seen this time and time again. It's a story. It's a tale as old as time. Never give up on your quarterbacks too early, and we're seeing that right now in Carolina, in my opinion, with Bryce Young. How much has this guy been put through the mud, man? Like, getting drafted number one overall is already a lot of pressure. It's a great privilege, and I mean, I think every kid dreams about being the number one pick, but like, so much pressure, especially when that team trades their entire future for you, then. You go and you had this awful owner and a bad coach and one of the worst rosters in the league, and you're undersized and you suck, and he gets dragged through it for his first rookie season and then most of this year. But it seems like finally, despite the bad O-line, the bad receivers, the bad coaches, the benching, he's turning a corner. Because Bengals were on bye. I didn't have any games to watch, so I was like, let me throw on Chiefs Panthers because I feel like something interesting is going to happen. And I saw something spectacular. I knew Bryce Young played well against the Giants in Germany, but I was like, hey, it's the Giants. And I knew he was solid against the Saints when they got that win. And then I watched him against Kansas City. And look, if you didn't watch that game, this is an auditory medium. I can't show any visuals. But you really need to have just watched that game to see how good he was. He has really turned a corner. What do you think about Bryce Young?
Well, people don't really watch the games because it's the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and they haven't been relevant since Cam Newton. It's very difficult. It's a tall task for a rookie quarterback to walk into a poor organization that has been very, very bad historically and change it around when you don't have support. I mean, his number one weapon's been Adam Thielen for 2 years.
And he got hurt.
Exactly. So it's not good. At all.
Yeah.
And people thought the solution was Andy Dalton because he won, what, one game when he started? And it was like, no, the Panthers are just not a good organization right. That's going to support a rookie quarterback. So the fact that Bryce Young did that against such a good defense with Spags yeah. in Kansas City shows a lot. I don't know what the future holds for him, but it's very difficult for rookie quarterbacks to come in, and you compare him to C.J. Stroud. It's
yeah.
They're in two different universes.
Well, can I give you some stats here? Because there's a stat here I love. Like I said, you really have to watch that game to understand how good he was. If you haven't, go watch the highlights, find an old broadcast or something. But here's a stat that I saw about that game that absolutely blew my mind. Okay, this is advanced stats. I forgot to write down who it was from. But against Kansas City, Bryce Young, who, again, undersized is the big thing everyone always talked about, he was blitzed on a season-high 40% of his dropbacks. Spags likes to blitz. Okay, 40%, that's the highest he's seen this year. On those dropbacks where he was blitzed, he went 11 for 14, 123 yards, and a touchdown with a season-high 9.6 yards per attempt against the blitz. That is, like, vets do that. That's fantastic. And the other thing about rookie quarterbacks that we got to always remember is the fact that, look, guys, over the last few seasons, we have been spoiled with great rookie quarterbacks. Stroud, Daniels, Herbert, even maybe Bo Nix.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree with you. Again, as far as rookie quarterbacks go, it's so hard to scale success until you've seen them in a proper offense and a proper system, and you can see how much coaching even impacts them after this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Johnny, thank you so much for coming on. This is Luther by Kendrick Lamar off a great album that came out of nowhere last week.
Thanks
Have
for
weekend,
having me.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them most. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, get them strictly with that fire. It's a vibe, do your dance, let them watch. She a fan, he a flop, they just wanna kumbaya, nah.
This world, concrete flowers grow, oh.